if you want to be a Renaissance man, it can't be just because you want to impress people. You have to have a deeper purpose for that. So find your purpose. And then the second thing is to aim low. Just take small steps, celebrate the steps. And three, make sure you have some kind of a feedback system in place.
Welcome to Future Skills, where we prepare you for a future of accelerating change. I'm Ludvig Sundström.
And I'm Mikael Syding.
Today's episode is a little bit different than usual because we'll be answering questions from our listeners, and these questions are taken from our newsletter. In total, we're going to be answering 11 different questions. Let's begin. Our first question is from Åsmund Ryningen. This question from Åsmund is that he wants to be a commercial real estate copywriter. I'm not a professional, but I know some people who actually work with copywriting. And from my understanding, it's pretty much like any other kind of consulting business, meaning that if you want to change careers and become a professional copywriter, then first you should try to do copyright work for the company that you're employed at. And this goes back to his question. He specifically says that he does not have any experience with this prior. So it's a complete change of career. So therefore, I would try to do some copywriting work for the company that he's currently working at. And then after that, I would try to do free work for one or two real estate persons or projects, like a big company in the real estate sector. And then after I'd done that, I would get a testimonial. And then I would use this to pitch other clients. And then when you do pitch these clients, you want to have a list. You want to have a list that's ordered by importance. And then you can either start with the most important clients if you're like pretty confident, or you could start with the least important clients so that you burn the least important ones first.
I really don't have any idea in this field, but this is how I would do it. I would look at actual copyright, actual real estate copyright from various firms, and I would take that and I would improve on it, and then I would send in the contrasting pieces of work to those companies and say, this is what you used and this is how I would do it. What do you think?
That's an interesting approach.
I have no idea if it would work. I have no idea whether anybody would actually read it and do anything with it. But, it's one way to start.
Well, it makes sense because at least then it will stand out.
All right. Should we move on to question number two?
Yes.
So Marcus Martinson, he wonders if biotech is about to become the biggest industry. And he also wonders about virtual reality and whether we will upload our brains or connect our brains and live perfect lives in virtual reality. So Ludvig, what do you say?
Well, I don't know too much about biotech, so I can't really answer that. But in terms of the second question, he's asking another question about the book Homo Deus by, I think the guy's name is Noah Yuval, very hard name to pronounce, Harari, anyway, the Homo Deus book. And the question is, does free will exist, basically? And I don't think it does. I think that's just a term we made up. And I think that we have very limited willpower, and the ability that we can have a willpower or discipline, it depends on a bunch of psychological factors and biological factors, where homeostasis is the most important one. And the rest is basically about momentum and rationality, which has to do with like everything from what you do, consistency and habits, to training yourself to think better.
Regarding free will, I agree that from a philosophical point of view, it doesn't exist. But as a common sense word or notion for the everyday life, I think we feel as if we have free will and we can act as if we have free will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it works from that point of view. I'm not sure exactly how that ties into the question about virtual worlds and living perfect lives in there. But back to the question of biotechnology, if that will become the biggest sector in the future. And I'm sure it will be one of the biggest sectors. And the reason I'm saying that is that human beings are biotech machines. And I think more and more industries will converge around the idea of making us live longer and live happier and more maybe perfect lives, to use his words. So I think since we are biotech machines, biotech will will be the big thing in the future. But you could also look at it from another point of view, and you could say that any of the main driving technologies could become very big, like artificial intelligence or biotech or nanotechnology or there are a handful of those kinds of industries. But I also think that they will all converge around the human body and human mind.
Mm. Okay, moving on to the next question. It's from William Johansson, and he's 19 years old and pursuing a bachelor's degree in financial economics. He has a bunch of questions here.
He's asking me specifically what I think about work in finance. And my short answer is, avoid finance. It's probably the worst place to be unless you are the top 1% within finance. I think finance will be a shrinking industry going forward. We have just been through a 4-decade period of increasing financialization, and I think we are due for some kind of mean reversion towards less finance.
Hmm. He also has a question. He has a bunch of questions, but his third question is that he wants to know how to basically study better. It's a long question, but my answer is, how do you study better? Well, if I go back and I look at what I did when I was in university, I had a very good routine, and I would get up 2 hours before I went to my class, and then I would read for 30 to 60 minutes, and then I would meditate for about 10 minutes. And I would drink my coffee during this time. And then when I come to class, I would ask a question within the first 10 or 15 minutes. And then I would get adrenaline because it was a big class, a lot of people to talk in front of. And all of these together, it really broke me out of homeostasis and made me really active. I was able to learn so much faster by doing this. And then I was also learning on my own time because I was reading the book in the morning.
I think your ideas are really good. The question is, who has the willpower to actually do this? but to break him down, the things that you are saying. So what you're doing is you're getting up and warming up the brain so it's ready. And then I suppose that your meditation is both as a kind of focus exercise as well as priming exercise. So you think about what you're going to learn. So the brain's pattern recognition is ready for listening for what you're supposed to learn, something like that, maybe. And then the thing with the question, I actually came up with that one too when I was in school. I also used it when I was working, because sometimes it was very easy to fall asleep during financial presentations. But if I just made sure to put my hand up and ask a question before hundreds of other financial professionals, that really woke me up. So I think if there's just one thing you should do, is be the one asking the first question in first class in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that would probably also make you primed, because you need to ask a question about whatever it's about.
Yeah, and I think if you have a longer term perspective, like a helicopter lens, then when you become older and you're not in school anymore, you're not going to be able to have that same sort of conducive environment towards doing these kind of things. So don't take it for granted.
Yeah, and I have one more thing, and that's something that I learned between grade 9 and high school, and that was to look up and explain every word you read that you can't explain already. It sounds like a handful, but pretty soon you'll know more or less all words you need to know. And by making sure you actually understand what's written, you don't come to the end of the page with just a blank mind. You've actually understood what's there. So just look up the words.
He had 5 questions, but let's take one more. And it was, he's asking you how to become a Renaissance man. I mean, if you reformulate that question, what he's basically asking is, how do you become knowledgeable in many areas and not just put into one realm of society?
He actually phrased the question also as how to become a sprezzatura, which kind of means how studied nonchalance, how to appear to almost be born with it, although you've actually studied pretty hard. And I'm more or less writing the book on this right now, and there are a lot of things to say. But just to mention just a few very important things, and it's to, you have to have a purpose. You have to know why you're doing this. If you want to be a Renaissance man, it can't be just because you want to impress people. You have to have a deeper purpose for that. So find your purpose. And then the second thing is to aim low, just take small steps, celebrate the steps. And three, make sure you have some kind of a feedback system in place, something that makes you analyze what you did, why you did it, and how you can change it. And that's how you build an ever-increasing loop of understanding and knowledge. So those are the three steps: purpose, small steps, and feedback.
Okay. Let's go on to the next question. It's from Donnie, and I'm not going to mention his last name, but he's asking, if you were starting over from age 18, what are the three things that you would recommend a freshman to immediately do in business, life, investing in general?
That's a small question.
Yeah. So this is exactly how you don't want to ask a question, because it's so broad that you can say almost anything. There's actually a very funny clip from some Berkshire Hathaway meeting where this investor guy, he asks Charlie Munger, this old smart guy, and he asks him, well, I can't remember exactly what he's saying, but he's saying something like, okay, so what's your latest moat? And he basically wants to know how to find the most successful businesses. There's nothing wrong with asking that, but it's a secret.
Find a way to organize your knowledge. Find a way to systemize both how you collect it and how you retrieve it and how you manage your insights and information. In short, get a commonplace.
I want to go back to the question again, because the reason this is not the best question is because it presumes that we know your talents and temperament and personality, and we really don't. So probably you don't either until you become older. So it's a very hard question to answer. But since you're asking me, I would have read books sooner without asking for permission in university. And then I would have learned the basics about websites maybe 2-3 years earlier too, instead of procrastinating that for a long time.
More specifically, I would say read the books Start With Why and the book Deep Work.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. It's about accounting. He is, or rather, whether to keep being an accountant.
Yeah, well, so he seems to have like a quite a high level job, but he's already feeling alienated in somehow. It's not really what he thought it would be, and he wonders how long should I stick it out, and when is it time to jump ship?
It's a complex question, especially since neither one of us has worked with that. But I mean, it's probably a general psychological thing that it's a good thing to set a deadline.
It sounds a little bit similar to having an investment that you're not really happy with. So you have a stock in your portfolio, and it's not really performing the way you hoped it would, but you're hesitant to let it go because you don't really know what to invest in otherwise, and you don't want to take the loss or the very small profit, no matter what the situation. So therefore, you'd keep procrastinating. And I think, and I always think this, no matter if it's a relationship or a job or an investment, when you feel those feelings, just rip off the band-aid straight away. But in this case, I wouldn't just resign without having a backup plan. So I would use the strength of your position, because it's valuable. What you have and your employment is valuable, but not as an employment per se, but as a platform for looking for other jobs, because you can say, I work at this firm, but I'm looking for a challenge at your firm instead. So start actively looking for a job, because you are not staying where you are. You are moving, but move with the sense and platform of actually having a job.
Okay, let's take the next question. It's from Henrik Nordström, and he has it's a two-part question. The first is, how do you develop an international career? And the second is, what country do you think is best for developing an international career? And I think that the way to, quote-unquote, develop an international career is to have some sort of job where you can work online. So you want to be able to work from the internet anywhere. That is, I think, the only way to have an international career.
And I would like to know more. What's your education? What kind of work can you do? Do you want to work in a large corporation, or do you want to work with a startup, or do you want to work online? But no matter which it is, even just having an international career, end quote, is pretty broad. I mean, it depends on where you start from, or if you mean that you want to be able to move around continuously rather than, well, for you as people often say, I'm looking for an international career, and that means staying in another country than the US. But one thing I would do is start mapping employers and clients in those countries where you want to work.
Yeah, keep lists.
Yeah, and you'll probably see some kind of a pattern that you can use. What kind of employers do you like, and what do they look like in the countries you are researching? And how do clients in those countries differ from clients where you are right now? So just start to look for a different pattern that you can use. Mm.
I also think that probably, I don't know exactly how old he is, but one of the best, one of the best jobs might be to work as some sort of consultant for one of these strategy firms, because a lot of those jobs travel a lot. Like you have assignments in different countries and so forth. That's like an international career.
Yeah. And if you don't even have an education yet, and you're asking this very early on, maybe get an education where you know that your skills will be in demand everywhere. For example, computer science.
Okay. Let's move on to the next question by Per Yi. He wants basic advice on setting up a commonplace system in Evernote. And he's asking, what are some pros and cons to using notebooks or tags? Okay. So the way that I would start doing this is I would select the top three or four areas of your life that you think most about. And if you don't know about it, then, observe your thinking a bit, then you will find it. It might be something like learning, health, career, family, finances, something like that. And then once you've found these three or four categories that you think about the most, which you can do by journaling or introspection, then try to divide up that field of thinking into subsections so that you kind of examine the way that you think about it regularly in like a funnel-based manner with different tiers.
One, he should look up your ultimate commonplace system. And second, he should only do one note or notebook, and it should be called commonplacing. And then he should start thinking about commonplacing and start making notes about commonplacing in his commonplace system. And that will be his only note to start with. So he learns about commonplacing.
Yeah, that's a good way to simplify it. I could answer a lot longer and more complex, but I don't think it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, well, you actually wrote the book on the topic.
Yeah. I also want to say that the reason that I like Evernote is because it syncs to the phone, which means that you can access the system that you build from your phone, and that's very nice. Okay, let's take the next question. It's from Robert Presto.
Yeah, and he's asking me, how much do you attribute luck to your success as a fund manager? There is no good way to answer this. I mean, sometimes I say it was all luck. But on the other hand, I do have a lot of knowledge, and I've shown grit, and I've worked hard and long, and I have collected and organized a lot of knowledge, which mainly goes to say that I have been prepared for the situations that arise. I never knew which situations would arise, but I was prepared for a lot of different scenarios. And when they occur, I can't really call them luck or bad luck, but whatever situations arose, I reacted to it in a prepared manner. So that means that on the one hand, their luck is all there is. That's the most important thing. But on the other hand, it's your reaction. And my reaction, I think, has been more or less 100% prepared and not reacting emotionally. So in that sense, it's 0% luck. I can't really put this in any better way.
It's difficult to contextualize the past without making up stories.
Definitely.
Okay. Next question. It's from Victor Berisai. He's wondering, if you were 18 years old and you go to college, what path would you choose? And it might not even be college. It could be some sort of other specific route, future career, where you think things will happen in the next 20 years. So again, this is a good way to ask a question, but it's still a very difficult question because it really depends on your personality and temperament and things like that. So in hindsight, I would probably not attend university, but since it's free in Sweden and you even get money for attending, it's a very attractive choice. But in hindsight, I really wasted my first 2 years in university.
On the other hand, if you don't know what you want to do or what you should learn, then just going into any program as college that puts you in a context where people are thinking about their future, they are thinking about their education and their potential careers, and that means you get a lot of input, and that could set you on the right path. That would definitely have been my way. I also often say that it's better better to study outside the formal system. But when I was 18, I had no clue whatsoever what to study, what careers there were, what anybody was supposed to do. And nowadays, sure, now I know what I could study and how to do it. But since Victor is asking, I'm guessing he has no idea what he wants to do or should do. And then it's probably pretty good to just put him in some kind of a more or less difficult and intellectual college program. So I would say computer science or quantum computing or physics or law school, something like that. Some generalist but high-end intellectual education, just to give him enough input to then decide what to learn.
Yeah, I agree. But I think one thing that's important to highlight is that you didn't really have the same range of choice when you were going to school.
Oh yeah,
like
that's true.
25 years ago or something.
Yeah.
Compared to, for example, me or Victor now, because now you have all these like high quality blogs and podcasts and information sources. Whereas in those days, the internet was so primitive, you could barely find any kind of information. Wikipedia didn't exist. All these things.
Yeah, I would think about what my best talents were. Like, am I a networking and a people's person, or am I more introverted and into numbers and perhaps programming? Then from there, I would branch out and say, like, if I'm a numbers person, then computer science, programming, something like that is generally in demand, I would go for that. Or potentially, if I feel that I have the talent, or at least could get the talent, then I would go into something that is really difficult and scarce, like quantum computing, because I think quantum computing or potentially some kind of biotechnology career, those will be very important in the future. So if you can get the upper hand in quantum computing, that would be like knowing about cryptocurrencies 10 years ago.
Mm.
All right, should I read the next one? Because
yeah.
I've actually answered this one on email. So it's Michalis Polakis, and he says, what is the best way to get 10,000 euros from you without doing anything? I'm a Nigerian prince. Well, judging from his name, I actually asked him, are you really a Nigerian prince? And well, he answered that, oh, you got me, I'm not. But Ludwig, you answered this in a serious way.
Well, I remember when I was like 20, and there was this really funny forum. I think it's called the Scambaiters, and it was basically about avoiding being scammed by Nigerians. Really funny niche forum. And then there was this really funny thread in this forum where some guy, it was an enormous thread with hundreds of pages, and this guy was like really counterattacking one of these scammers. And this scammer had been trying to obviously get money from him. And then this guy was trying to sell him computers. And there's a famous computer that's called Asus Laptop. I actually have an Asus. And he's selling anus laptops. And then they have these really funny videos. We can attach it. Or you can just search on YouTube for anus laptops.
With the highest standard of technology packed inside your anus, our own patent wipe it clean software, your anus will stay clean of viruses.
Next question from Max Bustam. He's asking, when it comes to investing in gold, people often mention intrinsic value. Can you explain what this means? And then he has another question, but let's start with intrinsic value. And it means that something has some sort of value other than being a fiat currency. And a fiat currency is whatever you say is meaning. So everyone, you know, someone just decided this thing, this currency, could be anything. It could be rocks. It could be dirty socks. It could be anything.
Yeah, and it's very easy to see how like a building has intrinsic value. You can live in it and it shelters you from the weather and wild animals. And food has intrinsic value. It has the value that you can eat it and survive on it. But he's asking about gold and, for example, fiat money.
Yeah. And so everyone, you know, anyone could say that something is worth something. And as long as other people agree, then we can trade based on that. And that is our shared understanding. And that is a fiat currency. But for intrinsic value to appear, like Mikael said, there has to be, even if other people don't want to trade with you, it still has some sort of value. And gold is usually used as an example because it's been around for a long time. There are many different reasons.
Gold is like very interesting because like fiat fiat money, like these paper bills that we use for trading, they have no worth at all. But sometimes they are backed by gold. That means that you can come with your paper bill and exchange it for gold. It's an agreement that you will get gold for it. But then you sit there with a yellow lump of metal that you really can't do anything with. Sure, it has a small value in terms of for electronics, and maybe you can kill somebody with a big enough gold bar. But gold doesn't really have intrinsic value either, except maybe since you know it potentially has a use case, since it's rare, it doesn't rust, you can't make any more of it, and those characteristics makes it a good candidate for backing fiat currencies. But still, like, gold is somewhere very close to not having an intrinsic value, and still is often talked about as the only real money that can be used to back something that lacks intrinsic value altogether. So it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is just that we don't have anything better.
I definitely understand why you ask. People talk about gold as if it has intrinsic value, while it really doesn't. All right, should we go on to Samuel Dean's question?
Yes.
So he's asking, how do you set your goals? One at a time, divided into various areas, for example? And do you tell others about your goals to create accountability? And, do you have goals at all, or more like systems and processes like Scott Adams? So how about you, Ludwig?
That's a three-part question. And the first part is that I'd like to divide my life up in different areas, and then I try to cycle between them. And we've discussed this like framework of the four capitals before. I think that's a very good way of managing your time to focus on different areas of your life. And then you can do it like once per quarter. It's pretty effective. And then talking about goals, I think it's contextual. I think it depends on where you are in life and your situation and so forth. I used to really talk about my goals a lot. Now I don't so much, except for maybe a few people. But it was more helpful before because I didn't have the same sort of support structure. Now it's a bit different. So it depends on your situation. I think most people should probably talk about their goals a bit more.
When I was younger, I had no tangible idea, no real idea about the difference between processes and end goals. So I think I tended to work more towards goals, like getting an exam or acing a test. There were goals. There were distinct goals. But in reality, from day to day, I really focused on the processes without really thinking about it. But the older I've gotten, the more I've gravitated towards that the processes are everything. So I don't have any goals whatsoever anymore. I don't care how much money I have, where I live, whether I have a car or not, if I'm going to go on a vacation, if I have so nothing in terms of goals is really interesting to me anymore. It's all about the processes. And those processes, they are within different areas, definitely. So I don't just have one process, like getting up in the morning or something like that. But rather, I have one process that is working out, another process that is about how and what I eat, another process is about how and what I study. So I have a handful of various processes, but no goals. Hmm.
I want to add one thing, and it is that people talk about this goals versus processes, and when you frame the question like that, it makes it sound like you can have only one of them, but they're not mutually exclusive. You can have both. So I just want to highlight that.
Yeah, that was it for today. So remember to subscribe to the Future Skills newsletter. And this episode is edited by Alexander Martin. Thank you, Alex.